You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hey, 8:36 on the west coast of the United States, and here on a Friday, All Marine Radio continues. Joining me, as he does on occasion, is military writer for the Washington Post, Dan Lamoth. Dan, happy Friday. How are you? Happy Cinco de Mayo. Any big plans for Cinco de Mayo? Everybody Hispanic today. It's always, it's most of the time a good time. I can tell you, especially in Southern California, it tends to be an above average time. How about you?
Yeah, I had some cookout plans, but it's been raining sideways in Washington all day, so we'll see what happens to that.
Well, okay, but you, we all know that give it a little time, it'll change, yes?
Yeah.
All right. Dan, just a real quick review for people that don't know you. Give them your career path to the Washington Post.
Sure. I grew up in Massachusetts. I moved down to Washington in about 2006. Got degrees in journalism from the University of Massachusetts and the University of Maryland. Started working for the Marine Corps Times back in 2008. Did three embeds with the infantry in Afghanistan for the Times. Moved on to Foreign Policy Magazine and then the Washington Post 3 years ago.
Okay. Has it been awkward this week being a Red Sox fan with the infighting with the Orioles? Has that caused you any issues at work?
No, not nearly as much as the Celtics Wizards series has.
So you got to go in and surround sound relative to the region and your land, the land of your the People's Republic of Massachusetts. All right, interesting. Quick question about your embed time. When you look back on that, what are the things that stand out the most? Because not too many people get to live like that in combat with guys that are fighting. I'm curious. One, how has that affected you in your life? And two, when you look back on it, give me two things that you learned from it that you would have otherwise never, ever been able to learn about really your craft and your chosen profession.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, in my mind often. In particular, my first trip was Marja in spring 2010. I was actually downrange now 7 years ago. So, you know, this time of year, you know, all those Facebook memories, all those guys I've stayed in touch with, all that stuff tends to percolate back up. Just yesterday, there was a guy who was a team leader, actually a squad leader, and he was wounded like days before I reached one platoon in particular with India 36. And it was just, you know, his thoughts on kind of being removed from that situation 7 years later, and he seems to be doing pretty well, and I've stayed in touch with him and a number of individuals from that platoon in particular. And, you know, it's just good to see some of these guys doing well. One of them got married last weekend, just all that sort of stuff.
Right. How about professionally? How did it affect you professionally?
I mean, I think I always had kind of a good perspective and appreciation for, you know, what the military does, and in particular what the rank and file enlisted do, you know, infantrymen in particular.
Right.
But I think that experience, you know, kind of, you know, beat that into my head with a sledgehammer. You know, I don't think there's any way around spending, you know, a month or two in a combat situation like that, particularly where there are numerous firefights in a given week, and not have that change you. Not have that make you a little more appreciative of, you know, life as we know it when you get back. And at the same time, you know, I think it does fray my nerves a bit more when you hear some of the more typical, things people gripe about, you know, just knowing how much tougher life can be, than it is when you have a long commute or, you know, whatever, you know, first world problems we have.
you certainly must have interesting, given that experience, the story that you wrote, and I'm wondering if you see a linkage in it. First of all, let's talk about the story that you wrote this week. You guys filed a Freedom of Information Act request, I would think, based on either a tip or something somebody told you. So can you explain Freedom of Information Act and how that works and normally how that stuff gets on your radar?
Yeah, definitely. I've made a regular habit of filing FOIA requests really ever since I've covered the military. A lot of them are sort of things that make sense, you know, that it's specific events that generate specific, you know, response from me. You know, an aircraft goes down, you know, a casualty announcement is made, and in the casualty announcement it specifically says, you know, this one is listed under investigation. I've kind of, as a matter of course, just put in FOIA requests for those over years, and, you know, at times it comes back and it's something, you know, sad, like a car accident on a base, and it's not necessarily, you know, going to be newsworthy 2 years or 6 months or whenever the response comes back.
Right.
And it's better to just kind of let it lie at that point. But on other occasions, you know, it's something quite serious or something that wasn't null, or it's, you know, tied in with a court martial that's ongoing. Frequently, the FOIA response will come back as the court martial is beginning. And those are things you can't really let go. And I would put this one in that category this week. So, I mean, we're all aware and tracking, you know, people that follow the Marine Corps, the questions of Parris Island, the questions of boot camp in general, when it comes to, you know, what's occurred, where the lines are, where the lines perhaps have become a bit blurry. And, you know, the Siddiqui investigation and a couple of the others that are, you know, generating courts martial now, you know, those have been in the news. But I wanted to know what I didn't know. So I put in a request for basically any substantiated case of hazing and abuse over the last couple of years at Parris Island, and then more generally just in the Marine Corps in general. Wanted to know what was going on in San Diego too.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. And it's not to say that I'm going to write about each individual episode or each individual case. I mean, some of these are things that, you know, it doesn't say it's necessarily right or wrong, but when you look at a case and it's, you know, hey, a recruit was out of line for the fifth time in a week and a drill instructor shoved him. Okay, that's not according to regulations, but I also don't necessarily look at that as news.
Right.
But some of these other cases, and in particular the one I wrote about this week, I mean, whether or not it happened 5 years ago or not, when a recruit gets to the point where he needs skin grafts because it's the situation he's in at boot camp, like, that case may have been closed out a while ago, but that information had never come to light publicly. At least not in that kind of detail. And I saw it as necessary to go there.
Okay. And you know what, to be honest with you, I agree with you in terms of, I saw another article written, I think it was based on a Freedom of Information Act request in Marine Corps Times, and I'm you probably know the writer. I can't remember his, but I was, to be honest with you, to me the story was, how few of these incidents, at least as depicted in the article, over the course of, I want to say, a 2 or 3 year period, the number of incidents was not great, and the severity of the incidents was not something that I would say is overly alarming, because the dance you do at both recruit depots is sometimes the intoxicating effect that campaign cover has on different individuals. And so there's a certain amount of discretion that they are given, and some of them can't handle it. And so in the course of ferreting them out, these things do happen. And I think that's as much as we would say we don't like them to happen, that's the reality of it. And it's good when they happen. It's good when they're caught. It's good when they're dealt with, because that's what you need. I guess my question centers around your thoughts. Every one of these incidents that I read about doesn't happen without the knowledge of other people. It's not like there's other drill instructors that don't know what went on. I'm curious, as a writer, as you go down this hole, what are your observations relative to that?
I mean, looking through these documents, you know, the several cases I have, and I guess just to push back a bit on some of this, I think in San Diego there's been very few cases that have come to light publicly through these FOIA requests.
Right.
The Marine Corps Times story you mentioning that focused on some cases in San Diego that I had actually mentioned in my story as well about the skin grafts. I wasn't going to do necessarily a separate story on it. I kind of put them all together and put those less severe cases in San Diego at the bottom of my story about the skin graft situation. But I look at I think it's probably about 15 to 20 substantiated cases that have been released on a rolling basis over the last few weeks out of Parris Island. And they're all since 2014. There's a great range of what happened there and how severe some of these cases are or not.
Okay.
But there is a common thread that in the majority of these, other DIs either saw it, I think on occasion were trying to correct it themselves, but corrected it themselves rather than reporting it, and it continued. There are other cases where I think one particular day stood out as different. You can definitely see stresses on the DIs in here. There are cases of marriages breaking up that come up in the course of these investigations. There are cases of post-traumatic stress that come up in these cases. The individual involved in the skin graft case, he ultimately got a year in the brig. But one of the things that he raised in the process of this is that he was struggling with his own memory. And struggling with some of the things he saw in helmet. So, I mean, I think there are people who would say, yeah, so what I did too, and I think there are other people who would say, why did we put this guy in there in the first place?
That was my response is, yeah, so what? Everybody's got their stuff that they deal with. But I would ask the second question, is it appropriate for guys that have been, this is an opinion question, and you can answer it as you see fit, do you think it's appropriate? And I'll tell you, the guy, and I think you know him as well, Jeremiah Workman. He came back from Fallujah and was sent to with PTSD, and he was struggling mightily with a firefight in which they killed 24 insurgents. There was 8 of them; 3 of them were killed, and he struggled with his actions in that firefight. And he was ultimately awarded the Navy Cross for it, but he struggled with it. And during that period of time, he gets sent to the drill field. And clearly, I think, an inappropriate assignment based on what he was going through. Are there lessons for the Marine Corps in all of this in terms of if you have maybe at least a 12-month moratorium before you can be, if you come back from a combat zone, so that we can better screen you and not have somebody who's just come from one pressure cooker who's dealing with it straight down to the drill field and into another incredible pressure cooker? Are there lessons, do you think, for the Marine Corps?
I don't know if a moratorium would make sense. And I think there's certain – I would assume that there are certainly things to be said for having that some of that combat experience on the drill field. I mean, you want to relate those stories.
Sure.
But with that said, Workman's not even the only case where I know there's been problems. I'm drawing blanks on his name, but there was another case that I reported on some time back, and it was actually in the course of doing a feature story on modern Navy Cross recipients. It was one of my last stories in Marine Corps Times. I'm drawing blank on the name of the individual's name right now, but he related a story to me about how he had been on the drill field, how he'd been briefly sat down. They ultimately reassigned him elsewhere, and then he came back like another year and a half later, and he was back on the drill field, and he was very proud of that. So, that's a situation where I think you know, perhaps, you know, the system worked.
Right.
And obviously in the Workman case, things went pretty far awry.
Right. Right. Ultimately, you know, Jeremiah Workman's relieved, and which furthers his, I don't know what you would call it, his struggle.
Yeah.
And, so, but when I heard the story the first time, I thought, who in their right mind would take that guy and send him down to that kind of environment? Just seemed absurd to me. Can you walk us through the incident relative to the bleach?
Yeah, so the case occurred in late 2012. It was actually in a situation where you had a relatively new drill instructor, a drill instructor who had, on numerous cases in his very brief career as a DI, already been flagged as a problem. And he had already been sat down once for, you know, he had his hands around a recruit's throat, and it was serious enough where they sat him down for a few days. This is shortly after that. And he pulled this one individual. I think he actually pulled several individuals, but this one individual is the one that was really, you know, the problem case. And they had him doing some, unauthorized, you know, incentive PT, in a laundry room. They flipped the laundry room bin upside down on him. Looks like it was probably about 30 inches high based on the, case files I saw.
Okay.
So large enough to put an individual in it, but they poured bleach all over the floor first, put the recruit in the upside down bin on the wet bleached floor, and had him doing a number of exercises inside the bin. So, I mean, he's getting lightheaded with the bleach and everything else.
Right.
They cut him loose. They cut the recruit loose, however long after, 10, 15, 20 minutes after. And send him back to training. But he's still wearing the bleached pants, which at this point, apparently, you know, you could even see the stains on the camis. And he continued to wear those wet pants and wet underpants for basically the remainder of that day. Wasn't able or allowed to change. And at some point that evening, told a different drill instructor, hey, I'm burned. Basically, both butt cheeks are really painful. You know, and I don't know what to do about this. And, you know, it was noticeable enough where, you know, other recruits who had been in the showers, they saw it, they, you know, and they cringed when they saw it. So even that short time later, you know, it was already, you know, relatively severe. He asked for whatever kind of treatment he could get, and he was told, yeah, you can seek this treatment if you want, but you're going to be dropped from your platoon. He made the call, the recruit made the call, that he didn't want that to happen.
Right.
And he stayed in training for another 2 to 3 days. His drill instructors were aware that he was in pain. They were aware he was injured. They actually bought him burn cream, and he was applying it something on the order of every 20 minutes by his last day or so. But he went through rifle range training. He went through some other exercises and was there for another 2 to 3 days. And eventually it was just so severe and still getting worse that he went down to, you know, Paris Island medical staff, and they ultimately sent him, I believe, to Beaufort. And then after that, he was actually sent to a burn center in Charleston. And they diagnosed him with second-degree burns that had turned into third-degree burns, and he needed skin grafts. I believe they used cadaver skin and pig skin. And it was unclear, based on where the interviews left off, whether or not he needed a second round of skin grafts from his own body.
You know, it's distressing, to say the least, to hear this kind of stuff, because, you know, it's interesting when you talk to the better drill instructors, what they tell you is, we don't have to do that stuff to get what we want, to take them where we need to take them. And when you see this kind of stuff, it's just stupid. It's just stupid on top of stupid on top of stupid. You have a captured audience, right? You have all the tools that you need. You don't need to stray to those areas to do lifelong physical harm to somebody to do it. And to hear that, it's just, I don't know, it's incredibly discouraging. But the part I want to focus on, Dan, is, I mean, this stuff, these different incidents, the trend is that they happen in front of other drill instructors, yes? And nobody intervenes? Or they intervene on the down low because they don't want to get somebody in trouble? And it consistently looks like it never seems to be enough, that ultimately that kind of down low intervention only enables somebody to do it again.
Yeah, that's certainly a theme that comes up in virtually all of these cases. In this case, it was brought to light partly because of the injuries and partly because the other drill instructor, once it got to that point, reported it. And, there's a segment of these interviews where one of the other drill instructors is interviewed and I guess had challenged the individual who ultimately did jail time, what were you doing? And the response was, well, I was using bleach, but not that much. There's acknowledgement there, of things occurring outside the box.
But
outside the box.
But what's crazy, Dan, is that is still in denial. I use bleach, but not that much. Oh, really? Do you want to look at his back? And you want to reevaluate what you just told me? Because you used enough bleach to cause permanent physical damage to this guy to the point of he needs skin grafts, for God's sake. And so it seems to me there's still a bit of denial in this. Now, did you have a chance to interview, did you personally have a chance to interview them, or were they statements that were made to the investigators?
These were all statements with names removed.
Okay.
Made at the time. Some of them were command investigation files. Some of them were NCIS reports. And one of the things that I think the natural question is, why did this come up now? Why not before? This case was referred to almost as an aside in a Marine Corps Times story that came out in 2014 about a different drill instructor in the same platoon who ultimately was given a discharge, not allowed to continue in the Marine Corps, but did no jail time. And he was one of the other individuals that would have been in the know and perhaps was the one who ultimately reported this case. But the Van Dyke case, the individual who did jail time, how severe these injuries were and the specifics of what people saw, had never come out. And I asked a lot of questions back in the fall about the Van Dyke case because, I could see it as like, hey, here's an example in the media that had been referred to and, oh, we've got a recruit who was burned to some extent by bleach. Well, now's the time to talk about it while we're talking about all these other cases.
Right.
And I got virtually no information. So I put in the FOIA request, and it took until, I think I got it last Thursday night, a CD with all these files on it. And it was about 700 pages of documents.
All right, Dan, I want you to explain how that works. So when you file that Freedom of Information Act request, what are you entitled to and what are they supposed to supply you with? And can they redact the source document? So could you explain how that works for us?
Sure. So you get the actual case files typically, the witness statements, the police reports, the NCIS reports, anything that's relevant to any of these cases. And that goes for downrange incidents too. I mean, when you start talking about, the specifics about how a helicopter went down or anything like that, there's always going to be a paper trail. There's always going to be people that were interviewed and documents that reflect what they said.
Right.
So I'm usually looking through those, trying to piece together what happened after the fact. Often there's people that are willing to talk about it as well, but when you've actually got the black and white documents to go on, it tends to get a little bit easier to reconstruct it for readers and do so with a lot more confidence in being accurate. So in this particular case, you had probably in excess of a dozen recruits, perhaps more, that were interviewed. You had other drill instructors that were interviewed, and then you had the actual interview with the individual who ultimately, you know, was in the brig.
Amazing. I mean, it is amazing when you look at the different data. Now, in terms of redacting, the whatever institution that provides that, can you explain what is valid redacting and what is, you know, I'll call it invalid redacting?
Yeah, I mean, there's usually on some of these cases, particularly ones that occur in a war zone, there's going to be some level of classification involved. So anything that has remained classified will be blacked out of the document. There are times, especially when you start talking some of the more sensitive operations, where you can start flipping through the pages and entire pages are blacked out. In a case like this, there's much less redaction because there is nothing classified.
Right.
So at that point, typically names are redacted for the privacy. Especially when you start talking, you know, names of other individuals that were not charged with anything but present and party to it or saw it, you know, and it's like they didn't do anything wrong, but, you know, they are telling authorities what they saw, so their names are removed. There are ways that times where, based on other reporting, I'm able to figure out who is who. You know, in this case, it was quite obvious who, you know, which witness statement actually was the drill instructor who, you know, wasn't directly involved and ultimately did time.
Right.
But even his name was redacted from the gate.
Okay, so that explains redaction. I got to take a break. Can you hold on? And I've got a couple more questions, and then I'll let you go. But Dan Lamothe joins us here. He reports on military subject matter for the Washington Post and been gracious enough to be our guest this morning. Can you hold with us, Dan, for about maybe 15 more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by the Marine Corps Mustang Association. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers of other military services who share a common background. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen through the enlisted ranks and owes its origin to the wild horse of the American plains, and was a distortion of the Spanish term Mustango. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia, of all places, on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In its 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military career and their civilian careers as well. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. If you're one, they're talking to you. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. And you can also find them on Facebook. Go ahead and look for them on Facebook. Like them, but most importantly, join the organization so that you can help enable them to continue to do the work that they do for enlisted Marines looking to transition to become officers. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level, how do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development, and how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Ten minutes after 9 here on the West Coast. 10 minutes after noon, cutting into his noon hour, his lunch hour. Dan Lamont graciously giving up a bit of his time this morning as we talk about an article he wrote. The article is entitled, Marine Recruit Needed Skin Grafts to Treat Chemical Burns Suffered at Boot Camp, Documents Reveal. Based on a Freedom of Information Act request that that Dan made to the Marine Corps. To me, you've been to combat with the Marine Corps. You've seen the way Marines fight and the way the organization is. Critical to everything we do is the role of staff non-commissioned officers. Yet it seems to me in these different stories that there is, I don't know how I would describe it, an attempt to deal with this stuff on the down low that fails. And I'm just curious about your observations that you said a little while ago that just about every one of these episodes, it was knowledge among the drill instructors that this went on or was going on. And yet there doesn't seem like there's a bias for intervention. And I would draw a parallel to the Marines United thing, that, you know, people know that this stuff is going on, but nobody says anything. Your thoughts on that?
I guess to be fair, I would say that in many of these cases, somebody tried to intervene, but it was very much more of a peer-to-peer intervention that ended with that. In just about every one of these cases, there's some sort of in the rear view, hey, I knew there was a problem, I didn't realize how bad it was.
Right.
So I guess the question becomes, going forward, what needs to change in that regard?
What about our culture needs to change so the rebuff down low correction doesn't end there? Because ultimately somebody's life may hang in the balance. And you know, it sounds, you know, when you hear that, it sounds like, you know, I can hear people rolling their eyes going, oh, really? You know, are we going to go there with this? But the answer seems to be, yeah, that's where it needs to go. Is there any mistake about that?
And I have a hard time passing judgment on that,
right.
As an outsider. But all I can say is that in, you know, virtually every one of these cases, other people knew there was a problem. They, in some cases, did something. But in just about every one of these cases, after the fact, said, I wish I had done something else, or I could have done something else.
Okay. Let me, a couple emails. First one. Mac, I'm in the process of reading the article. Where is this recruit now? Did he ultimately ever become a Marine? And I'm curious to know. So, Dan, where is this Marine now? Or the recruit that got the bleach burn?
That's an excellent question. That's still a mystery to me at this point. I haven't been able to identify him. If he was interested in talking at this point, I mean, at this point, he may very well have served his 4 years and got out. I certainly would be interested in talking with him. But his name was redacted. I haven't been able to figure out who he is or where he went. I know he was a taller individual, which is why he wasn't able to fit in the bin quite as well as some of the others. And that appears to be why he got bleach on him. Himself in a way that some of the smaller recruits in that same situation did not. You know, just it sounds like he, you know, bent himself into a pretzel and ended up in a puddle of bleach to an extent that no one else did. But beyond that, I honestly don't know.
Okay. All right. Next question. Since these articles have come out, has Dan been contacted by Marines, former Marines, with additional stories? It seems like when this stuff goes public, you find people coming out of the woodwork with other stories that they've kept to themselves for a lot of years. So, Dan, have you had Marines come forward and contact you and said, you know, would you be interested in this story?
In virtually every time I write a story like this, I get other phone calls and emails, some dating all the way back to Vietnam.
Wow.
The trick in question for me in my shoes is, you know, what can I actually be sure of? You know, if someone relates a story to me, but there's nothing that else I can go on other than their word, it becomes difficult to report that story. But yes, those stories are certainly related to me.
And I think what you just outlined was the conundrum of a reporter whose job it is to report verifiable facts and not somebody who's relating, a columnist that might be relating an anecdote, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be responsible in the reporting of this. I'm trying to be fair to the institution. I'm trying to be fair to the individuals involved. I'm trying not to rumor monger.
Right.
But when I've got in black and white in front of me the extent of injuries that have not been reported,
right.
And it's certainly relevant as the broader conversation about, you know, boot camp and what's changed and what might need to change is ongoing. It seemed like a relevant, germane thing that needed to be out there.
No, you know, and I think what it points to is, and this is just me, my commentary, and certainly not yours. What it points to is, you know, initial effort to intervene is rebuffed. And we, and I'm sure that there's going to be people that maybe come forward relative to Marines United and say, yeah, you know, I mentioned that, hey, man, that's not cool. Well, I think that the lesson for institutionally is that for whatever reason, we pause there. We don't want to have a confrontation about that. And we need to have a confrontation. The females of the Marine Corps deserve for us to be involved in that confrontation. The recruits of the Marine Corps deserve for people to be, because they're essentially in a helpless position. You know, they deserve that conversation and that confrontation. We seem to be reluctant to, as an institution, we don't want to go there because there's some element of I'm betraying you by outing you by forcing this confrontation. And I think institutionally, that's a problem for us.
One of the things that I have found, I don't think surprising is the right word because I think I was actually prepared for it, but disappointing that even in a case this severe is the amount of reaction I get from other individuals, really from the same, you know, generation, who look at this recruit and say, man, what a snowflake. And reading through his witness statement and the statement of others, this is a guy who, even with these injuries, grinded it out for days, putting on numerous tubes of burn cream. You know, like he was actually running out of burn cream and they were getting him more.
Right.
At one point, there's a anecdote in there about him on the rifle range and he pressed his butt as hard as he could into whatever seat he was on in an effort to make it go numb so that he could actually do his job and not think about how bad it hurt. That doesn't sound like someone who was, you know, to me, trying to bail out or trying to, you know, take the easy way. This is someone who really wanted to be a Marine.
Oh, I mean, for him to bail out, all he had to do was go to medical.
Yeah.
And somebody, a Navy medical officer, corpsman, doctor, whatever, sees that burn and says, how did you get that? And the response is, I sat in bleach or I laid in bleach. And, I mean, come on, that's the red flag, right? That's all you have to do to get yanked out of that situation. And clearly that's not what they wanted. But again, I think that you hear that in the Marine Corps all the time, especially relative to recruit training. But there seems, and again, our camaraderie and that tightness, there's a downside to that. And it's standing up and doing the right thing, whether it's reporting hazing. Because oftentimes the people that report hazing, the next thing that happens is after you deal with the people that did the hazing is the group turns on them and they have to leave the group because they can't stay there because it's not safe for them. And what do? The right thing? What we tell them they're supposed to do? What we tell them that they're supposed to have the moral courage of a leader and of a Marine to do the right thing? That we don't stand for this. And then they do it, and then, you know, oftentimes they're run out of units because it becomes socially, inhospitable for them in a way that only close units can deal out that kind of punishment. So it seems to be institutionally something that the Marine Corps has struggled with for a long, long time, and I think any unit, any military organization struggles with that. How do you police yourself? How do you continue past the first rebuff so that somebody who's in a helpless situation doesn't get exploited, maybe and injured or maybe killed? So it seems to be an issue that certainly the Marine Corps institutionally has more work to do on. Where does this trail ultimately lead?
Well, I mean, one thing I've been trying to get at, there was a number of bullet points that the Corps released in the fall. Things they were going to change, introducing more officers, trying to increase the amount of supervision and I think this perhaps gets at the other side of the coin, trying to just increase the total number of staff at Parris Island, trying to make sure that there weren't DIs who were, you know, regularly shorthanded, regularly short of DI in their cycle, to decrease the stress on them as well.
Right.
But the obvious questions at this point are, is that working? I have requested interviews, with individuals who could lay out where they are, what's working, what's not, what they've changed, specifically, with the iSchool. And how do you change the investigations themselves call, a culture problem. And I think doing that while being fair to the individuals who are doing their job and doing it right, I'm trying to kind of follow those threads.
Okay. Because the truth is the vast majority of guys that go down there and women go down there do their job. But you do have these very, very high profile cases that are horrible for the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps, Marines in particular, staff NCOs and sergeants in particular need to be acutely aware of it and not tolerate this stuff. Are the Marines at Parris Island forthcoming in terms of being interviewed, or do you find them reluctant to be interviewed and those being tough interviews to get?
I have found it very difficult to get those interviews. I have had several individuals approach me off the record or in background,
right,
and say, hey, here's what happened to me, or hey, here's what I was dealing with. And some of these are actually DIs. So there are individuals who see it as a problem. I'm sure there are others who, wish that I would just go away. And I'm aware of that too.
Interesting. All right. What are you writing about over the weekend?
All things being equal, hopefully not much. we're tracking a number of things in the newsroom today. One sad story that has emerged today is there's a death of a Navy SEAL in Somalia last night. We're tracking what happened there. Real world still happening.
Right. And I'll tell you what, it seems like there's only more and more stories that are to be written as the United States, pushes the confrontation envelope on the Korean Peninsula as we continue to intercept aircraft off the coast of Alaska, which is nothing new relatively over the course of the Cold War, but certainly has ramped up, whether it be the newest developments in Syria, a no-fly zone aimed at the United States, put together by the Russians, or actions around Mosul and Yemen. So I didn't even mention Afghanistan. So no shortage of topics to write about for you. Are you getting enough? Are you getting enough days off? The last time we talked, you had worked for 22 straight days, both as the inauguration wrapped up. Busy place where you work, yes.
Yes, it's normalized. The first, few weeks of the administration was quite hectic and probably more so than a typical one, just because, considering the unconventional nature of what they were trying to do. But it's normalized to a large extent. We've tried to do things like talk more about who's going to work on call stories that emerge over a weekend. There's times where, I'm traveling and I know it's going to be, coming up. Secretary goes somewhere, some of those trips I'm on, obviously the hours get weird. But that's supposed to be the exciting part of the job.
All right. Can you give us the basics of the SEAL that was killed, in Somalia, another raid? What do you know?
Very little at this point, beyond what AFRICOM has released, in a press release. It was supposedly about 40 miles away from Mogadishu. I believe it was some sort of ground operation because there were, Somali, service members there as well. And there were two other Americans wounded.
Okay. All right. All right. Dan, first of all, I just want to tell you, I appreciate your reporting and, the tone of your reporting is always respectful And I think you're conscious of the number of Marines that read that. And also, you know, you've seen us fight, and you know the courage and the selflessness that we fight with. That doesn't mean the institution is without flaw. And the way you approach your criticism of the institution, I think those of us who read your stuff respect. And that's why I enjoy having you on. And thank you for coming on and doing this morning. And hope you have a restful weekend.
Thank you. I'm glad to do so.
All right. Thanks, bud. We'll talk to you later.
Take it easy.
Yeah, there you have it. Down the mall. If you don't know his work, go to the Washington Post, and he runs a. It's called Checkpoint. It's a blog, if you will, and his stories will appear under that. But Dan goes way back with the Marine Corps, and his reporting is respectful, and it's thorough. The you could hear him talking about people that contact him and kind of the lament or the struggle of a reporter. And that is, I can't write this story because I can't verify what's gone into it. And so, so it's interesting when you hear that, that lament, that struggle. So the press release put out by AFRICOM says the following: on May 4th, one U.S. service member was killed during an operation against Al-Shabaab in Somalia, approximately 40 miles west of Mogadishu. U.S. forces were conducting an advise and assist mission alongside members of the Somali National Army. Al-Shabaab presents a threat to Americans and American interest. Al-Shabaab, and they go on, U.S. forces are assisting partner forces to counter Al-Shabaab in Somalia to degrade the Al-Qaeda affiliate's ability to recruit, train, and plot external terror attacks throughout the region and in America. We continue to support our Somali and regional partners, blah, 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 blah. That's all the information that is put out in the press release. So just put out by AFRICOM. But thoughts and prayers and no further information about the Dan had more information than the press release indicates. So sad day. So in your thoughts and prayers, keep that family, and who may or may not know yet about their loved one who's been killed in action in Somalia. We're going to take a break. More of Al-Marine Radio on a Friday. On that somber note, coming up next right here on the Al-Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good. But I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. .934 on a Friday. Mike McNamara with you. My thanks to Dan LaMoth for coming on. Yeah, it's you know, the stories are disturbing. I read you an email. The email says this: I've listened to your program and I appreciate the candid way that you speak about our culture. One of our dirty little secrets is the entire, quote, we police our own, period. The truth is, we don't, period. We will go up and raise an issue with somebody, but if they look at us and say, get the fuck out of here, I would say that 95% of the time, that's where it ends. I absolutely agree that in every one of these cases, there were other Marines in positions of responsibility who had a duty to raise this and did not. I think it is the ongoing leadership crisis in the Marine Corps. And you could take it to operational units where stupid stuff happens. I don't care if you're talking about the stealing of tools, you're talking about the gun decking of scores. I don't care what you're talking about. There are people normally in a position to prevent these kind of things from happening. And they look the other way because they don't want to pay the price that they will certainly pay in terms of social ostracization. We've all gone through this. What do? I know what's going to happen. Do I have the moral courage to do it? Sadly, most of us don't. Appreciate the program. Appreciate his sentiment. You know, I was thinking about not this particular issue, but I don't know what got it in my head. The first time I was ever confronted with, you know, doing something I wasn't supposed to do. And I'm not afraid to stray outside the bounds of what's normal relative to being a Marine. But most of what I would call the nonsense of the Marine Corps in order to get things done. The first time I remember being confronted by a moral challenge like this was in Officer Candidate School. There was a kid who was in the rack next to me. His name was Mitchell. He was black. And he was struggling. And one of the prior enlisted Marines got us all together and said, "We have to do something about Mitchell." And now, he didn't use the term blanket party, okay? But we certainly all understood that it was going to fall to us to get Mitchell to go away. And so we're standing there, and, you know, this prior enlisted guy is telling us, "Hey, we have to get Mitchell out here." And I said, "I'm not doing that." And look, I'm not holding myself up as some paragon of virtue, because I'm not. I've been NJP'd by general officer, okay? So I'm not. But I looked at him, and it went against, I've been only raised in my life playing on teams. And as a teammate, my job wasn't to turn on him. That was that staff sergeant's job. That wasn't my job. That was their job, to make him go away. My job as his teammate was to help him. And that's what I said. I said, "I'm not going to do that. Our job is to help him, man, to get better. Not to run him out of here. I won't do that." And then a lot of guys just looked at the floor and didn't say anything. And I wasn't trying to be confrontational, because I was as intimidated as anybody else out there. But I just can't. I have a thing about people that are in kind of helpless situation. And I've been like this since I was a kid. Because I was always a cool guy. I was a good athlete. I was a pretty good student. I had leadership qualities from the time I was a little guy. And I mean, like, I'm talking about first, second grade. Like, I was, you know, we're going to have class officers. Who wants to run? I mean, I put my hand up. I'll run. I'll be the president. I'll be the president of the class. I'll be the vice president. That sounds like something I should do. You know, we're going to pick teams for sports. Who wants to be a captain? I do. Okay, Mac, you're a captain. I was a captain at my grammar school at recess, picking teams every day from first grade to sixth grade. Every day. I had my own little Vito Corleone empire going, until these guys came in sixth grade and said, "Hey, why does he do that every day?" And everybody else said, "I don't know. It's like, it's our system." But I can remember a kid by the name of Michael Messner. And he was a kind of a shorter kid. He was a little bit frail. He wasn't a China doll, but he wasn't a rough and tumble kid like my friends and I were. And he had red hair, and he had fair skin. But Michael Messner was a friend of mine. He was a nice kid. And I didn't care if he wasn't a good athlete. You know, he was a nice kid. But I, from the time I was little, I was always conscious of that, of people picking on him. And we didn't do that. And if somebody picked on him, I'd say, hey, knock it off, man. Leave Messner alone. And it was easy being a cool kid. You could do that. And you could tell people to knock it off. And so I've always had that. But we as an institution, I say we, the Marine Corps as an institution has an issue. And I would pinpoint it as this. And I would say that it's an NCO staff and CO issue because they live where the rubber meets the road. They see these things. Officers tend not to. And so I don't know if more officers down there is an answer. I do agree with Dan in that on a couple things. One, it is not easy. I've made requests by guys that I would call personal friends to come on this program and talk about that, and I have been told no. Maybe down the road I will. I think that's not good. Just like with General Neller, take your face shots, talk about what you're doing and trying to do, and set an example of what it is to be a leader. By you not being interviewed, it doesn't reflect well on you. It doesn't reflect well on the organization. Because most of the time, those guys are doing the right thing. They're doing the right thing. And people want to hear what they're struggling with. Hey, here's what we're trying to do. So to me, there's two things at the recruit depots. One, you know, getting up at 4 in the morning and still being awake at 2300 at night, you know, how do you expect them to perform that very pressure-packed job when you're just running them in the ground? Okay. Now, the answer would be, well, that's the way we've always done it. Okay, that's fine. Doesn't make it right. And if staffing's an issue, then guess what? We need to revisit staffing. And people need to get a day off. They need to decompress, especially out of that environment where that's what you're doing. Okay. And I don't care what history has been. The stories I hear about the hours and the days. Come on, man. If you don't think one contributes to the other, you would be stupid. And I don't care if it's the way we've always done it. There's a better way. And maybe that better way involves, hey, if he's got his wits about him a little bit more, A, maybe he won't do it, or B, maybe if he does do it, others around him will save them from himself. So the drill instructor that spent a year in the brig for having this Marine lie in bleach and not taking care of him, do you think he would have preferred that somebody intervene in that as opposed to spending a year in the brig? I bet he would. I bet he wishes every day that he sat in that brig that somebody would have grabbed him by the stacking swivel, the neck, and said, hey, knock it off. We don't do that here. Got it? And I would say the same thing with the Marines United thing. You know, to see somebody victimized, to see their personal information and images weaponized and then thrown out in front of God and everybody, and that's okay. So we seem to be stuck between peer pressure and doing what's right. So what we do is we kind of sort of say, hey, man, that's not cool. Hey, fuck you. Shut up. All right. Because if the next step is the confrontation. The confrontation to do what's morally right. When it's not easy and it's going to involve social cost, you're going to be pointed at, he's the guy. But I'll tell you what, if somebody would have done that for this guy, he wouldn't have spent a year in the brig. He would have gone to maybe another assignment at Paris Island at worst. All right? He'd still have a career. He wouldn't be getting a dishonorable discharge. That's the cost of it. So, this hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at the Marine Corps Mustang Association. Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and have served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commission or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks, owes its origin to the wild horse of the American plains, and was a distortion of the Spanish term Mustango. The association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In its 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement, offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for you. If you're a Mustang, they're looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. You can find them on the web, MarineCorpsMustang.org. You can find them on Facebook. You can go ahead and like them. The most important thing, though, is join their association so they can continue to do the important work that they do. More of All Marine Radio. We're going to check a couple of news headlines coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, A text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave servicewomen. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on a Friday. Check a couple of news stories. If you missed it, Dan Lamoth reported a bit ago an AFRICOM media release talking about the media release talks about a U.S. service member. Lamoth said it was a United States Navy SEAL, was killed 40 miles west of Mogadishu. So the press release confirms that. Dan also said that there was other American service members that were wounded. So we'll stand by for more information about that. A few stories in the early bird that merit attention. The head of SOCOM. We can't do everything. So kind of an interesting little comment. Quote, we're not a panacea, said General Raymond Thomas III in testimony before the Senate Armed Service Committee on Thursday. We are not the ultimate solution to every problem, and you will not hear that coming from us. That has been misconstrued in some of the media circles. The comments came in response to senators' concerns about the operational tempo facing special operations forces and the growing reliance on those personnel for an ever-broadening range of missions. More than 8,000 special operations personnel are currently deployed in 80 different countries. That includes almost 700 in Iraq and Syria, working with local forces on a host of counterterrorism and support missions. So we'll find that. We'll find that testimony and see how long it is. And I think, as always, that discussion is something that I think I would like to certainly listen to. And I enjoy putting that kind of testimony on the air. So let me find that testimony. Write myself a note. SOCOM testimony. All right, and we'll see if we can have that on Monday. Another story: new Afghanistan troop plan goes to the White House this week. General Mattis has been globetrotting. Secretary Mattis has been globetrotting a little bit, so Teresa Whalen, who is currently working as the Pentagon's Assistant Defense Secretary for Special Operations, told senators that the new plan will likely go to the White House next week. Quote, we're actually actively looking at adjustments to the approach in Afghanistan right now. Whalen told the Senate Armed Service Committee, the interest is to move beyond the stalemate and also to recognize that Afghanistan is a very important partner for the United States in a very tricky region. So interesting stuff. And so you'll see a modification to the plan that all indications are required for additional forces in Afghanistan. Another story being in the wake of that, and then there's been headlines about it that Secretary Mattis is negotiating with Iraq in terms of troops that will stay beyond the fight in Mosul. this story on Fox News today. Iraq's prime minister says no U.S. combat troops will stay in Iraq after the fight against the Islamic State is concluded. Haider al-Abadi's remarks came in a statement on Friday morning following a report by the Associated Press that talks are ongoing between Iraq and the United States on maintaining American forces in Iraq. Al-Abadi says that the American troops will be advisors who will help Iraq's security forces maintain, quote, full readiness for any future security challenges. So maybe he disputes the characterization as combat forces. Okay, you can call them whatever you want. You can call them whatever you want. So that going on. There's also an interesting, I won't even go into it. It's a story about a Navy flight lieutenant who was jailed for over a year and a half for passing information to an undercover FBI agent after he lied on leave requests about where he was actually going relative to his leave and going to, I believe it was China. Ultimately winds up in the brig Yeah. How's that work for you? I don't, it's just, astounding. If you ask me, relative to some of this stuff. I feel kind of the need to comment on this because I've seen it now, on a number of occasions. And there's a headline in San Diego Union, and Kerry Cosentini published something yesterday that I noticed, simply because I have a son in the battalion. And that is, don't believe the social media rumors Kemp Pendleton's Dark Horse Marines aren't dying in Afghanistan. So somehow or other, Third Battalion, Fifth Marines is the subject of some type of social media event saying that they're suffering heavy losses in Afghanistan. Okay, but they're home at Camp Pendleton. So, but these things get their own life, and for whatever reason, this one has gotten life. I guess originally, it busted out. The latest hoax, this is according to a guy named Carl Prine. He's a reporter for the San Diego Union-Tribune that does a lot of great work relative to 1MEF, the 1st Marine Division, and the 3rd Marine Air Wing. Although the latest hoax seems to have broken out on Facebook in late February before dying down in mid-March, it has come roaring back in recent days, however, triggering a flood of social media support for the quote-unquote Dark Horse Battalion that once suffered heavy losses in Afghanistan, but isn't actually in combat now. Quote, we're asking everyone to pray for Dark Horse, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, and their families. So anyway, if you have a chance to step on that rumor, please don't hesitate to do that. It's just stupid social media stuff. So anyway, social media can do good stuff. I think it struggles at times, It struggles at times. It seems like it struggles most of the time to be good. That'll do it on a Friday. My thanks to the All Marine Radio head chef for joining us this morning, talking about grilling. So you'll hear that again momentarily, so don't touch your dial. And also for Dan Lamont, reporter for the Washington Post, who reports on a variety of military issues. One he's focused on is, two that he's focused on are the Marines United issue relative to the Marine Corps and online behavior, and also the events surrounding the death of a recruit by the name of Siddiqui and the ongoing investigations relative to that. So, I think most disturbing, as we conclude today's show, is he and I have similar experience in that the guys that are leaders, the Marines, male, female, that are leaders at Parris Island do not want to be interviewed. Now, look, everybody knows that they can't comment on ongoing investigation. They can comment on the issues, though, and what they're doing about that. So I find that a little bit disturbing. A little bit disheartening. So, anyway, we'll see if we can change that on a Friday. Thanks for listening all week. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Tell your friends about us. Email the program as often as you can. I enjoy hearing from everybody out there, and motivates me, to be honest with you. So the email I get is truly inspiring because they talk about the guests that come on the program, the constant reminder that this culture is throughout the lives of people to be better, to do good, and all those kind of great things that the culture of the Marine Corps brings out of people. So have a great weekend. Yankees and Cubs in an hour. Don't miss it. Wrigley Field, one of the best. If you're a Mustang, join the Marine Corps Mustang Association. They do great work. We'll have a Mustang interview next week, by the way, just so you know. So, on a Friday, All Marine Radio, out.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You know, sometimes that morning, that the explosion's a little bit louder than others. I'm not sure why it's feeling that way this morning. I didn't drink or anything last night. So, anyway, good Friday morning to everybody out there. All Marine Radio on a Friday. Yeah. How about that? So,